The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you from the February-March 2019 issue of the AARP magazine. And we're going to start off with an article called Money Worries, Relax. We asked what financial issues concern you most. Our experts are here to provide answers and advice. This is written by Karen Chaney and Ellen Stark. By the time you hit your 70s, many of the financial questions that once plagued you, how much should I save, should I change careers, can I afford that engagement ring, no longer apply. But some money issues are timeless and other new ones have emerged. Concerns about debt, housing affordability, and estate planning, for starters. To help you solve your biggest money conundrums, we conducted an exclusive survey last fall of 500 adults 70 or older to learn their greatest financial hassles and fears. Then we sought out expert advice to help address these issues. Got a money problem on your mind? You'll find the solution here. Financial security. I think I have enough in savings to fund my next 20 years, but I don't want to think. I want to be sure. What can I do to be more certain? By 70, you are probably an experienced retiree. You know what money you have, you are familiar with your spending, and you likely have a good idea of your overall health. You can use all that info to make a strong financial plan. Reassess your cash burn. Look at your spending so far, take stock of what you have, and do a deep dive. The spending you did in your 60s usually slows down as you go from 72 to 85, though your medical costs may go up. A lot of your expensive trips are over, and you won't buy as much. If you assume inflation is around 3% a year, maybe also assume your retirement needs will increase by only 2% a year. Lock in a monthly check. With a single premium immediate annuity, you can guarantee income for life, and it simplifies withdrawals. All of a sudden, it's easier to live off your money. As you get older, annuities become more attractive and make more sense as a longevity hedge. You can start shopping for one at websites such as immediateannuities.com and Income Solutions. Stay invested. If you're 70, there's a good chance that retirement will last another 20 years, if not longer. Don't take on more risk with your portfolio, but don't take on less by, say, going to 100% bonds. A balanced portfolio, 50% stocks, 50% bonds, perhaps, is usually the right starting place. Prep the health care cost, but don't freak out. Health is an unknown. We've done new research on how people respond to health care shocks. The result? Retirees spend less on discretionary expenses like vacations and entertainment. So there's a cushion. An end-of-life health shock can be significant, but most people aren't going to have one. That's by David Blanchett, who is head of retirement research for Morningstar Investment Management. Our next area is preventing family strife. I'm afraid that after my spouse and I pass away, our four kids will go to war over our estate. How can we prevent that from happening? Money itself is rarely the reason kids fight over an inheritance. Usually it's issues of fairness. If there's a hint that one child is favored over another, that's usually when tensions arise. Lower the chances of that with an estate plan that's thoughtful and clear. Divide evenly. Never give less to a child just because she's wealthy. It punishes kids who are successful and often who took your advice. Acknowledge debts. I generally advise clients to forgive loans, but if a child has been using you as a bank, that is, borrowing money from you repeatedly, the loans should be repaid or deducted from that child's portion of your estate. Go with the oldest. All other things being equal, appoint the oldest child as the executor of your will. Choosing your firstborn is like arranging a classroom in alphabetical order. No one questions it. If the oldest declines the responsibility or is clearly terrible at managing money, name a different child. Set a sale. When it comes to assets and personal property, it's usually better to let the kids come up with a fair system. Leaving grandma's wedding ring to a specific child could convey favoritism. Instead, have your heirs hold an estate sale and divide up the cash. If one of them really wants a certain asset, he should tell the executor, who can get an appraisal and let the child take the item as part of his inheritance. This is from P. Mark Acciatura, Michigan estate and elder law attorney, and the author of Blood and Money, Why Families Fight Over Inheritance and What to Do About It. Our next category is Too Many Loans. I have credit card bills and a second mortgage on my home that add up to way more than I have in savings. How do I get rid of this debt? After putting food on the table and keeping a roof over your head, your top priority should be paying off debt. That could mean giving up things you enjoy but don't need, such as dinners out, sports tickets, travel, and other luxuries. The idea is to generate positive monthly cash flow that you can dedicate to debt payments. Then take these steps. Pay expensive obligations first. Sequence your debts from the one with the highest interest rate to the one with the lowest, and pay off the highest rate debts first. Divert savings. Given today's low interest rates on deposits, extra cash in the bank isn't doing much for you. Use some of your savings to pay off high interest debt. Leave enough in savings to cover emergency needs and a few months of regular bills. Seek alternatives. One option: borrow money from family members at a lower rate than what your credit cards charge. Don't be embarrassed to ask well-off children. Seek protection. If you can't cover even your basic living needs, consider a bankruptcy filing, but that's a last resort. You'll most likely end up with a lower standard of living because you may not have access to credit for the rest of your life. This is by Donald Duncan, who is financial advisor at Savant Capital Management in Chicago. Next, we have Dream Vacation. I'd love for my spouse and me to relive our European honeymoon. You know, one more extravagant travel fling. How can we swing this while staying financially secure? In my experience as a financial planner, I find that the clients who ask if they can afford something are the ones who have the resources to be more extravagant than they are. Price it precisely. Do the hard research. Pencil out the real total cost of your trip, including airfare, hotels, food, entertainment, and spending money. Be honest, so you don't have to worry about money while on vacation or after you return. Tote up your cash. I find that many in this age group have plenty of funds in low-interest CDs and saving accounts to cover a big trip. These are generally good accounts to tap because they aren't earning much and aren't the accounts that are used for paying monthly bills. Adjust. If you don't have enough funds in cash accounts, consider revising your travel plans slightly. Unlike working folks, you have the advantage of a flexible schedule and can save a lot by going off-season or flying on dates when rates are lower. Guard against taxes. If you decide to dip into taxable brokerage accounts or take a larger distribution from your IRA to pay for a trip, make sure that doing so won't bump you into a higher tax bracket. This from Mark Orr, financial planner and author of Retirement Income Planning, The Baby Boomer's 2018 Guide to Maximize Your Income and Make It Last. Next on our list is expensive drugs. Monthly, I spend four times more on medicine than I do on food. How can I cut my pill bills? Get an annual medicine checkup. Meet with your pharmacist as soon as you can, and once a year do a comprehensive medication review. She can check whether all your medicines are appropriate and affordable. Sometimes a doctor may prescribe drugs without being aware of what other specialists are prescribing. Your pharmacist can look for this and work with your prescriber to stop inappropriate medications, thus saving you money each month. Forgo insurance. Ask your pharmacist to compare the price of your prescription with and without insurance. Some pharmacies have a $4 copay program for many generic drugs. If your copay is higher than $4 for a single drug, ask the pharmacy to process it without insurance. Write for help. most pharmaceutical companies will send free medications to low-income patients who meet certain requirements. Preparing the paperwork, known as a patient assistance form, can take time and be tedious, so ask your pharmacist for help filling it out. Shop for new drug coverage. If you use a Medicare Part D prescription plan, you can change it each year during open enrollment from October 15 to December 7. Plans vary in coverage. Look up your specific medicines with different plans available in your area to see if any cover your meds more thoroughly. This is from Mohamed Jallo, assistant professor at Touro University College of Pharmacy in Vallejo, California. Next, we have financial burdens. Here's my vow. I will not become a financial burden to my kids. How do I make sure of that? Don't overhelp. I see plenty of people who are cautious about their own spending but give regularly to their family. Being generous to your family is a lifetime habit, but it can backfire and leave you more vulnerable. Your family will understand if you cut back on gifts, particularly if the outcome is that you remain financially solvent. Find your next home. One way to avoid being a burden is to live where you won't need to depend on your kids, such as a continuing care retirement community with a life care option. If you meet the community's financial and health entry requirements, you can usually stay even if you deplete your resources. Do the math. You know this, but money management really comes down to what's coming in and what's going out every month. So assess your cash flow, including everything you spend on, such as gifts and loans to loved ones. Then, tally up how much money comes in each month. Next, grade your math. If all is well, you have more money coming in than you're spending. If your income doesn't cover your expenses, you'll need to tap your savings. When you're in your 70s, planners recommend spending no more than 4 to 6% of your savings each year. Try to stay within that range. This from Jill Gianola, financial planner in Columbus, Ohio. Medical costs. Even though I have Medicare, my health costs are killing me. What am I doing wrong? Adopt healthy habits. The best way to improve your health and reduce your medical costs is to live healthily every day. Eat right. Exercise. Get your weight closer to where it's supposed to be and avoid toxic substances such as cigarettes, illicit drugs, and too much alcohol. Pose tough questions. Become an empowered patient. Understand every medicine you are taking and why, and become more involved in the decision-making. Ask your doctor, how is this test going to affect what you do for me? What will you do with the results? If he can't answer, you probably don't need it. Reassess Medicare. You may be able to lower costs by switching to Medicare Advantage. If you rarely go to the doctor and are fine with the network that a Medicare Advantage plan provides, it is probably a wise choice. The downside is that some Medicare Advantage plans don't allow out-of-network coverage, and it can be very costly for the ones that do. Plus, if you go back to traditional Medicare, you may have to undergo underwriting for a new Medigap policy. Most older people have conditions that affect insurability. Tap your community. If you have a chronic condition, find other patients who have it at websites such as Patients Like Me and learn more about controlling your symptoms. This is from Carolyn McClanahan, a physician and financial planner in Jacksonville, Florida. Now, managing my money. It's getting harder and harder to track all my finances. How do I simplify things? The absolute best thing you can do is create an operator's manual to your life. Collect annual statements for your financial accounts, deeds to any properties, car registrations, insurance policies, estate planning documents, and any other pertinent info about your finances and health care. Put them all into a 3-ring binder or file. Then, take these steps. Review your holdings. If you own more than one bank savings account or IRA, ask yourself why. If you can't pinpoint a reason, merge your accounts. This will simplify your manual and your life. As you consolidate accounts, watch for lower fees and consistent positive performance. Spread the word. tell your kids, heirs, or trusted helpers where you keep your manual. Whether it's in a safe or a nightstand, your support team needs to know where to find it. Include the children. In case you haven't done so already, talk with your kids about your care and finances. If you meet with a financial pro, bring someone with you. Having an extra set of eyes on your money will help you manage it. This from Ryan Sheffer, financial planner at Advanced Capital Management in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Next, selling my things. I have a house full of fantastic stuff that I no longer need. How do I get fair money for it all? Reality check. People tend to overestimate the value of what they have. They think that because it's old or an antique, it's worth money. And then there are items people think have no value that end up selling for a lot. The message, don't assume anything about the value of your stuff. Dial back your expectations. Prices are down since 2006 and 2007, when housing prices started dropping. Furniture, china, silver, and flatware have all plummeted in price. You might find surprising value, however, in good pottery and Native American items. Old advertising signs are also selling. Use online tools. Websites with records of completed sales, such as Invaluable, Live Auctioneers, and WorthPoint, you may have to pay to access them, are better than eBay for researching values. Remember, an item's condition matters. If you want to try to sell on your own, set up a storefront at Ruby Lane, Etsy, or eBay. You'll pay a percentage of the sale one way or another. Bring in a professional. Get a free consultation with an estate sales specialist who may suggest other options for selling. Interview two or three. A good liquidator may not take your sale if the gross is less than $5,000. The typical commission is 35 to 40% of the sale. This is from Becky Matala, owner and president of Girlfriends Estate Sales in Renton, Washington, and co-founding board member of the National Estate Sales Association. Then we have giving up control. When should I ask someone else to manage my finances? How will I know? Whom can I trust? Cognition can get tougher as we age. There's no one test for dementia. You can rarely be sure when you're crossing over, but you can see signs. Ask yourself, is it hard for me to do something that had been easy? Am I still able to focus on minutia? Plan before there's a problem. Have conversations with your family while you're in good shape and comfortable talking about what lies ahead. Discuss, for example, who should have your durable power of attorney so that person can make financial decisions on your behalf. Settle on the right person or people. If a family member can manage your money, that's fine. Bring in an outsider when the kids don't feel comfortable or they don't agree. Even if you hire a third party, such as a lawyer or financial advisor, have someone watch the professional. The more people involved, the better. Enlist partners. Put a trusted friend or relative on your financial accounts, or have the designated person look over your statements. A trusted family member or advisor can help protect you. Find a reliable pro. If your accounts are complicated or you have money anxieties you need to address, consider hiring a certified financial planner, a CPA personal financial specialist, or a chartered financial analyst. They have to pass rigorous exams and pursue ongoing education. Plus, they've promised to put clients' interests first. This from Jill Schlesinger, author of The Dumb Things Smart People Do With Their Money, and CBS News business analyst. Next, how to be generous. I don't have Bill Gates League money, but I'd still like to be a philanthropist. How can I provide a charitable legacy after I'm gone? Leave your retirement account to charity. Name a charity as your IRA or 401k beneficiary, or designate a percentage of it for charity and the rest for your heirs. Even if you have a small estate, any money in a 401k or traditional IRA creates a tax issue. Any recipient aside from a charity will eventually pay taxes. Give and receive. A gift annuity provides lifetime income from a charity in exchange for making a gift. The income you earn is a function of your age and interest rates. Whatever remains after you die goes to charity. These annuities are most commonly established by large, stable charities. Let your heirs be philanthropists. If you have $5,000 or more to donate, you can make a gift to a donor-advised fund, which is itself a charity. You get to advise how the assets are dispersed. Upon your death, your children may be able to be the advisors, depending on the fund or community foundation rules. This is from Russell James, who is Director of Graduate Studies in Charitable Financial Planning at Texas Tech University. Too much tax. Even though I've stopped working, it feels like I'm still paying a lot in income tax. Is there anything I can do to bring this down? Yes. The fully taxable IRA and 401k withdrawals you are obligated to make annually upon turning 70 and a half, called required minimum distributions, RMDs, can push you into a higher bracket, especially in high tax states. You can't bypass these tax payments very easily, but there are some smart moves to make. Be charitable. When you're 70 and a half or older, instead of taking your RMD, you can make what's called a qualified charitable distribution. You can give up to $100,000 a year from your IRA directly to charity. You don't get to take a charitable deduction, but unlike an RMD, that donation won't increase your taxable income. Make a switch. Even in your 70s, converting your IRA to a Roth IRA could make sense if you're in a low tax bracket, say 15%, have a spouse who is much younger, or want to leave a tax-free asset to your kids. You'll pay all your taxes at the time of transfer, but no further taxes on future principal or gains. This is from Scott Bishop, who is a CPA First Personal Financial Specialist at STA Wealth Management in Houston. And then finally, we have suddenly flying solo. We're worried. One of us has been handling our finances for years. If that spouse dies first, how will the other one know what to do? Discuss the unthinkable. This is a difficult subject. Who wants to talk about death? But you need to sit down and discuss. What are our bank accounts and investments? What insurance do we have? Where are the papers? What are the passwords on the accounts? Have a glass of wine. Do something to make it easier. Say, we love each other, but let's get practical for an hour. Then make it a routine. Be an open book. Know each other's passwords and give each other permissions to access individual accounts. If you share accounts, have both your names on them. Keep at least one credit card and debit card in your own name so you can take care of expenses in the short term. Make introductions. A trusted advisor can be a great resource. If a couple has an advisor, though, the husband is often the primary contact. The wife may never have gotten to know the consultant. Meet with the advisor together. You want someone who makes eye contact with both spouses, gives them space to ask questions, and answers without being patronizing. If the pro doesn't fit that description, get a new one. Get involved. If you're the primary money manager, ask your spouse how she wants to help. You can take over paying a few bills each month, or keep an eye on a few investment accounts, or we can make these decisions together. This can create more intimacy in your relationship. Becoming the sole decision maker is a tremendous challenge. Women often go into widowhood feeling they lack financial savvy, but they discover a courage and resiliency they never knew they had. If you're the spouse who's not handling the finances, start learning now. Getting involved in decisions is empowering for you and your relationship. This is from Maddie Dichtwald, who is co-founder of AgeWave and co-author of Influence: How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. Now, I hope the clock will let us end with a shorter piece on the endearing Shirley MacLaine, who is the 18th Annual Movies for Grown-Ups Career Achievement Honoree by AARP. When they were handing out Fear, they forgot to give Shirley MacLaine, 84, her share. There's no limb she dares not climb out on, no role she can't conquer, no potentate she'll permit to intimidate her, not even Father Time. She chalks up her confidence to the discipline of diligent dance study since age 3, which trained her to be a strong, tireless survivor. A friend tells me I'm going for the record of old age working, she wrote in her 2011 book, I'm Over All That. At 20, she got an unexpected chance on Broadway when the lead actress in the hit musical The Pajama Game snapped an ankle. McLean moved out of the chorus and into the spotlight singing Steam Heat. That led to a part in Alfred Hitchcock's 1955 movie The Trouble with Harry, for which she received better reviews than Hitch did. For all her iconic femininity, McLean has always been one tough cookie. She ran with Frank Sinatra's Rat Pack back in the 60s without getting trampled, and she once groin-punched mafia boss Sam Giancana for cheating at cards. Oh, so her story goes. Her grit showed in the movies, too. In the 1960 drama The Apartment, which provided one of her three Oscar nominations before she turned 30, she famously responds to a final scene confession of love by her gin rummy playing leading man Jack Lemmon by saying fondly but Rat Pack razzlingly, "Shut up and deal." Sharp, spunky, and, as Bette Davis once said of McLean, always good, she often found that the cards fell in her favor. McLean scored her third Oscar nomination as the Sweet Tart in Irma La Douce and a Golden Globe nomination for a similar role in Sweet Charity, which provided her signature tune, If My Friends Could See Me Now, a song she later sang as the opener of her smash 1976 live stage show. But her feistiness always peeked through her kooky ingenue roles. Her status rose as she outgrew gamines and began to play moms, such as Dee Dee, the former dancer with a spine of steel, in 1977's The Turning Point. That trait was still evident when she portrayed a grande dame opposite the formidable Dame Maggie Smith on the soapy PBS drama Downton Abbey. Instead of slowing down, after age 30, she earned twice as many Golden Globe honors as before, plus Oscar nominations for The Other Half of the Sky, a China memoir, a documentary she wrote and co-directed in 1975, and The Turning Point. Just before her 50th birthday, she won her first Oscar as Jack Nicholson's appalling, irresistibly appealing love interest, Aurora Greenway, in Terms of Endearment. When she played a headstrong woman who decides to write her own obituary in 2017's The Last Word, Variety raved, "Shirley MacLaine is still hip." And did we mention that she has written 15 memoirs since 1970? People tease her when she details her belief in past lives, but it has helped her sell more than 20 million books. Today, MacLaine is as visible as any actress gets. She has made 6 movies in the past 3 years, and she embraces aging as passionately as any leading man she ever upstaged. At 73, she told The Guardian, "I'm falling in love with my wrinkles." At 82, she told writer Scott Huver, "Aging people are underserved in this culture big time. I want to serve that community and be a voice. I want to be queen of AARP and say what AARP members feel. I don't want an older person to be invisible any longer." And now we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you'll listen next time and that you've enjoyed it today. I am Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and this broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138.